There are some words that seem to perfectly express what they mean just by their sound. Words like boom, shimmy, giggle. They're called echoic words or onomatopoeia. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, English language expert Patricia O'Connor will be here. Pat blogs on the website grammarphobia.com. She is also the author of Woe Is I, as well as a number of other books on language. Today, we'll have some fun with echoic words, and we'd like to hear about your favorites. So whatever you're doing, screech to a stop, splash through a puddle, do what you have to do to give us a call at 866-780-9100. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, is here with me. Pat blogs on the website grammarphobia.com. She's also the author of Woe Is I, as well as a number of other books on language. And she joins us periodically to talk about language. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Charity.
Nice to have you back. And today, we're going to talk about echoic words. What are echoic words?
Yes, well, I call them echo words. Linguists have fancier names to them. They call them echoic or imitative or onomatopoeic. But at any rate, the sounds echo what they stand for. Now, common examples are words like bang, burp, hiss, fizz, buzz, boom, splash, words that imitate the sound they represent. And a bit more subtle are other kinds of echoic words that really echo their meanings of the words more symbolically, like lump and flash and glimmer. They don't actually sound like those things they represent, but they seem to illustrate their meaning.
They're evocative somehow.
Yes, they are evocative. And with both kinds of echo words, the sound and the meaning are closely related. But I have an example for the football season.
Oh, sure.
Now, this is kind of an old-fashioned cheer. Nobody says sis boom ba these days, I don't think. But it's sort of the archetypal old college cheer, sis boom ba. It originated in 19th century America, and it's actually echoic. It's an expression that represents the sound of a skyrocket going up. Now, sis is the sound the rocket makes as it rises, hisses. Boom is the sound of the explosion. And the final sound, ba, imitates the ah of the spectators. Now, sis, boom, ah wouldn't have worked as well, so they stuck a B in to make it more euphonic. So sis, boom, ba is an echo expression.
Well, and I would guess that rah, rah, rah would also be.
I don't know if rah, rah, rah is actually echoic. You know, there's another one, yay, yay, yay. That actually is derived from the very old word yay for yes. So it's sort of just an affirmative sound. It's another form of yes. So it's not really echoic. But there are some objects that you wouldn't think are echoic, but they actually are. The word clock, for example, and the sound that it makes, tick-tock, both have echoic origins. Now, tick-tock is obvious, tick-tock, the sound, but you wouldn't think of the word clock as echoing anything. But actually, in the Middle Ages, the original meaning of the word clock, it was a bell. Now, in medieval Latin, the word was clocca, and the clock got its name because it imitated the rattling of early hand bells. They weren't chiming bells like the round cast bells that make that sweet ringing. The early hand bells were like rattles, so they were made of sheet iron. So the clock got its name from this rattling of early hand bells, which sounded like the sound that the clock was making.
Well, that's fascinating. And I can imagine that a lot of these words, when they first originated, they would have been slang.
Well, possibly. I mean, but I think back in medieval times, people didn't think in terms of slang. They they didn't have those the same sort of prescriptive attitude toward language, where they felt they had to categorize some as legitimate and some as less legitimate. So we might think of it as slang if a 20th century word came along. Well, here's an example. The word flibbertigibbet for a flighty, frivolous, scatterbrained person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was officially categorized as slang when it came along, but it was probably one of those informal neologisms. Now, it's actually echoic. In its origins, it's thought to be imitative of the sound of meaningless chatter, because a flibbertigibbet chatters on meaninglessly.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and the word pump for, you know, pumping water, that was imitative in its origin. It came from another language. It came from Germanic language. But in Middle Low German, for example, pumpen meant to beat or to drive fish by beating on the surface of water. And in early modern German, pumpen meant to bump, knock, or thud. So you can see that when you're pumping water, you're sort of doing that beating motion, and it actually was echoic in the Germanic languages that it came from.
That's so interesting. Well, and to go back to flibbertigibbet, when you said it was echoic of the sound of meaningless chatter, then blah, blah, blah would be a modern version of that, right?
Yes, probably. Yeah. But there are some words that you wouldn't think of them as echoic to begin with, but then they seem obvious later. For example, ping pong. That word was imitative of the sounds the ping pong ball makes, hitting the paddle and the table, ping pong, ping pong. The word tom-tom, of course, imitates the sound of a drum. It originated in Hindustani or some other East Indian vernacular language. Toot, of course, imitates the blowing of a horn. And this I didn't know until I started poking around in this stuff earlier for this show. The word fanfare is thought to be possibly echoic in the original French. It was thought to perhaps imitate the flourish of trumpets, which was what a fanfare originally meant. Fanfare was a flourishing of trumpets as someone, a king approached or something like that.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up another language, because I think some of the more fun conversations I've had with my friends who come from other countries have been about animal sounds and how, you know, we say a cat says meow, and and then in French or German or
it's something else.
And that's so interesting, because with these echoic words, we do sort of feel like they should be the same from language to language.
We think, for example, that bow wow in English, is a pretty accurate representation of the sound made by a dog barking, bow wow. And we think, therefore, it's not really wholly arbitrary. But it depends on where the dog comes from, because a French dog might say nyaf nyaf, or a German one, wow wow, or a Japanese one, wung wung. So different countries have different words to represent the sound of animals and the sound animals make, and they are very different from country to country, although they're all in the ballpark, you know?
Right.
But a lot of words associated with animals are echoic, mostly because they imitate the sound the animals make, that what we think they sound like in English, and a lot of animal names, in fact. Mostly birds, but other things, like some animal names that are echoic because they echo the sound the animal makes, are owl, whippoorwill, crow, bobwhite, cuckoo, chickadee, and finch, and also cricket, the insect cricket. And, of course, we think of animal sounds represented in words like growl, hee-haw, honk, howl, meow, moo, oink, purr, tweak, quack, grunt, and all those, which, of course, in other languages think they sound slightly different, and the words are different. But I think I may have talked on the show before about grunt, because that was the source of the word disgruntled.
I don't remember.
So. Well, okay. Maybe I didn't. But grunt is a very, very old word. Way back, goes way back into early Old English. And it represents the sound made by a pig. That's the earliest meaning of it. Later, to gruntle became a verb. To gruntle meant to make a sound like a pig. Still later, to gruntle meant to complain or to, you know, be annoyed verbally, to gruntle. And as time went on, the suffix dis was added to gruntle, not as a negative suffix, but as an intensifier. So disgruntled meant even more gruntled than normal. So there once was a word, gruntled, that meant more or less pissed off. Disgruntled means the same thing. They aren't opposites.
Right, only more so, right?
More so. We've dropped gruntled along the way. But a lot of words for interjections and other kinds of human reactions. Well, the word laugh is thought to be echoic of the sound of laughter. And the word for laughing in many foreign languages is imitative of the sound of laughter. But we also have giggle, snicker, chuckle, guffaw, and words like gargle, gurgle, gulp, jerk, puff, screech, strum, throb, fuss, whimper, hush, whistle, and hum. Those are all echoic words. They tend to remind me of cartoon words like bonk, bop, zap, you know, those sorts of words that you see in cartoons written in balloons off to the side, thump, thud, zoom, tap, plop. Those are all also echoic.
There are so many of these words. Do you have any idea what percentage of the English language is made up of echoic words?
There's a myth that echo words make up a big chunk of the language, but that's not true. Echo words actually make up a very small fraction of the language.
But they're
most
awfully good.
Words, yeah. Well, they're fixed. They're pretty much fixed. No more of them are being invented. They've already been long since invented. So the words I'm talking about are pretty finite. They aren't being added to a lot. We aren't coming up with new words for animals based on the way they sound.
All right. Well, I'm talking to Patricia O'Connor. She is our English language expert. Pat blogs on the website grammarphobia.com. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. We'd love to hear about your favorite echoic words as well. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me today is Patricia O'Connor. She is our English language expert. She's also a blogger at the website grammarphobia.com, the author of Woe Is I, as well as a number of other books on language. And she's here today to talk to you. You can join our conversation. We're talking about echoic words. Those are words that sound like what they mean. So we just heard boom, boom, shimmy, shimmy. Those are a few of those. You can share your favorites. Also, if you have any questions about the English language, you want to share a pet peeve, that's okay, too. Give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And, Pat, we've already got a couple of callers on the line. Pete is on the line from somewhere in North Iowa. Hello, Pete.
Oh, hello, Charity.
Hi, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I think that the word wheeze is a good one.
Oh, definitely.
Like, you know, like when you're wheezing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That one kind of sounds for sure like a echoic word. But then the other word I kind of had a question about was, what do you know about the word poop? Thank you.
I don't know anything about that word. Sorry, I can't tell you. I've never done the etymology of it. But
how is that possible? You haven't lived with my 5-year-old son. I would think about it all the time.
No, I've done lots of words that are similar, but never that one in particular. But I have an etymology here right in front of me. Let me see. It's just a... What do you know? Not in here. They've got poop for the deck of a ship, poop to be tired out, and poop for the slang for inside information. So, sorry, I can't go into that in any great detail.
But there are a number of...
grateful for that.
Right, it's true. There are a number of echoic words, though, that represent bodily sounds. I mean, wheeze is one of those, right?
I wanted to talk about those because they're really interesting, and I promise I won't say anything gross and endanger your license with the FCC.
Right, but, only mildly gross here.
Yes, yes. But notable ones, of course, are cough, burp, and hiccup. And a lot of people think hiccup has been misspelled at times. I mean, that it has been misspelled and that should be hiccough, H-I-C-C-O-U-G-H. Sometimes you'll see hiccup written H-I-C-C-O-U-G-H, and that's in the mistaken notion that it was intended to be a form of a cough. Hmm. But that's not true. The word has actually been hiccup with a P since the 16th century. But the caller mentioned wheeze, which is a good one, because I also wanted to mention sneeze. Now, this is an echoic word with a very interesting history. It was echoic in its original language. It probably came from Old Norse. But when it first entered English, as when it was in Old Norse, it was spelled not with an S-N, it was spelled F-N. F is in Frank, N. Fn. It was said in English, fneeze.
Huh.
And the word in Old Norse was fnasa, meaning to snort or blow or sneeze. And this is interesting because a lot of words, well, eventually we lost that F-N sound. It's just not normal in English. And the reason we lost it was because back in the Middle Ages, in old manuscripts, F's and S's often looked alike. Maybe you've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
S's were sometimes printed so that they looked like an elongated F. So when these early old English manuscripts came along and were transcribed in the Middle Ages the scribes changed those F's to S's because it was more normal looking. But at any rate, to get back to sneeze, many words in English that start with S-N have something to do with the nose. And in the languages they came from, they echoed the sound of air being drawn in noisily through the nostrils or blown out through the nostrils. And these words include snore, snort, the 20th century word snorkel for breathing tube, also snout, schnoz, snoot, snooty in the sense of looking down one's nose, and snot. They all have related origins in prehistoric Germanic languages, echoing nasal sounds, and they're associated with the nose. Now, you may be as fascinated as I was to learn that the word snot at one time was a verb in English. To snot, it's now defunct, but at one time to snot meant either to put out a candle or to blow one's nose. Now, isn't that a loss to the language?
It is. We need to bring this one back.
I have to blow my nose. We can't say I have to snot.
Oh, that's so inefficient. We need to work on this one for sure.
Now, today we say someone snuffs a candle. And as it turns out, snuff, snuffle, sniff, sniffle, and snivel, which originally meant to run at the nose, they're also in this same family of words that start with N and have to do with our nasal passages in some way.
That is
anyway,
fascinating.
Anyway, I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to share that.
Well, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And Nancy is on the line next from Fairfield. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if this is the same thing, but words like squirmish or squirmy evoke that feeling. And what about the word like stub? Like when you stub your toe, it just brings up those feelings for me.
Yeah, they do, and that's the kind of thing I was talking about, that they may not be actually echoing the sound, but they echo what they seem to mean. Somehow they're evocative of those things. But let me look up squeamish here. Actually, we're having an item on our blog soon about squeamish, but I can't remember what it says. Look up squirm.
Well, the interesting thing with squirm and squeamish, when I think about being squeamish, what do? I squirm.
Yes, true. Huh. True. Now, I can't find anything that says to squirm is echoic.
Uh-huh.
But it sure sounds evocative. It sounds like it's exactly the right word for that thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank
you,
Nancy.
Welcome.
Bye.
Bye. John is on the line next from Fairfield. Hi, John.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to make a quick observation. When I was in the Peace Corps in Africa and in Ethiopia in 1964, I served with a Frenchman who was in the French Peace Corps, and I heard a rooster crowing, and I said, cock-doodle-doo. And the Frenchman said, no, in French it's cocorico.
I'm sure it's different in every language.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And there was probably a word for it in Latin.
probably. Well, and it's interesting because it's a different thing to imitate an animal mm-hmm. and to say the word of the sound, although sometimes it's very similar, like with moo mm-hmm. or meow. you're almost
meow
imitating.
Meow is kind of similar from language to language, although it may be spelled slightly differently. But bow wow is very different from different languages.
Well, and we have at least three different words for the sound that a dog makes, because we have
bow
wow, we have woof, we have rough.
Oh, we have bark and howl,
right,
too.
There's five right there, and I'll bet there are more. All right, John is on the line next from Iowa City. Hi, John.
Are you taking my call?
Yes, we are. Well, what would you like to talk about?
Thank you very much, and your topic is really fascinating and fun. I remember a few words from taking a year of Russian 30 years ago, and one of them is glupli, and it means stupid. Glupli.
Hmm.
I don't know that would be a echoic, but it's certainly
evocative.
Right. It kind of reminds me of someone that's kind of slow and sluggish and mm-hmm. stupid, glupli.
Uh-huh.
And a couple other words would be burr. If you're cold,
burr.
Yeah, and if you put your hand on something hot, yow.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
a lot of interjections, like fooey. Fooey, uh-huh. Which is sort of a dismissive interjection, saying more or less baloney. It imitates
right.
the action of dismissingly puffing or blowing out through your lips.
Uh-huh.
So that's echoic. And also interjections like ooh and ah, when we say, oh, there were lots of oohs and ahs when she walked into the room. Those, of course, are exactly echoic of ooh and ah.
Those are excellent, too. And the call sign or number or description of the station you're on now, WSUI, SUI, you know, we grow hogs in Iowa. I'm not sure that could have been completely accidental.
Well, I'm sure that it probably has something more to do with the University of Iowa than it,
I know.
But it has to do with Suey.
Coincidentally, you call, you know, hogs or pigs with that, I think.
Right.
And
yeah.
One other word that is both an echo word but also has a kind of a double meaning, the word posh. Are you familiar with that one? P-O-S-H?
Posh.
Yes.
P-O-S-H?
Yeah,
actually, it's not really echoic. Nobody knows where that word comes from, except we know where it doesn't come from. It's not an acronym for port out starboard home. That's one of the theories, but that's a myth.
Oh, interesting. Well, I would guess the word plush might be echoic, though. I mean, that maybe
plush.
That's just more evocative because it seems like it would echo the sound of sitting down on something very soft.
Soft, and sinking into it.
Right.
Yeah. There's a fine line sometimes between things that are echoic and some things that are just evocative. For instance, lump is thought to be echoic in a symbolic way. Because a lump, it's sort of a lump of a word. I mean, it's a big bump in your sentence, but it's not. It doesn't sound like a lump.
Right. John, thank you so much for your call. We've got Patrick on the line next. The number to call to join our conversation is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Patrick.
Yeah, hi, Charity.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I was going to tribute one word, flip-flop.
Oh, right.
As in the shoe, as it makes noise while you're walking.
Yes, yes.
And then as far as like a pet peeve, one of mine was the word literally and how that is overused and used wrong quite a bit.
Right, right. Literally means to the letter. So if you said my boss literally exploded when I told him I was going on vacation next week, that would mean he was splattered all over the room. So you don't really mean it literally. You mean it figuratively. But on the other hand, so many people now are using the word literally as an intensifier. As if you would say, really, he really exploded. That it's lost its original meaning. I mean, it still has a use. It still has a function, literally, but it's been completely co-opted by its use as an intensifier or as an emphatic addition to a description or to an adjective or to a verb.
Well, and you couldn't use figuratively in the same way.
You
mean figuratively, but that would take away all of the power of what you're trying to say.
You wouldn't say he figuratively exploded. It would be better just to say he exploded and not try to use an intensifier. Some of these verbs are intense enough already. So I wouldn't use it that way, but
I could see where, and it's a pet peeve of mine too, Patrick, so don't get upset at me. I'm not defending, but I could see where the similarity between the meanings of the words literally and really, I could see where that confusion would have arisen.
Exactly, because at one time, really was being misused in the same way. It got its start meaning real and actual, as opposed to imaginary or exaggerated. So it once had a literal meaning, grounded in the real. It wasn't just used as an intensifier or to bump up an adjective or a verb to make it stronger. It wasn't a prop word. But now, of course, we've accepted it as that. As we say, I'm really tired.
So that at one point, that must have driven people as crazy as literally drives Patrick.
Yeah, it maybe wasn't as much of a buzzword, but it at one time that was considered a misuse.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so maybe in another 100 years, literally will...
Exactly. By the way, I found an etymology for plush.
Okay.
It's not really echoic. It's borrowed from a Middle French word, plouche, which meant shag or plush, which was a contraction of an earlier word, peluche, which literally meant a hairy fabric. So,
okay.
It was hairy when it started out. It meant hairy or furry. So that's how that got it start.
Okay, very interesting. Molly is on the line next from Ames. Hi, Molly.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I was wondering about the word squash and how that relates to the vegetable squash.
Oh, that's a very good point. Nobody's ever asked me that before. And if you will email me, I would love to do that as a Q&A on our blog. But let me just see if I can find that in my etymology here. Squash. The fruit. Oh, you know what? The fruit of the gourd family. Mm-hmm. That word is relatively recent as language goes, 1643. But the word meaning to crush, which was from the early 1300s, to destroy or crush, it was borrowed from an old French word, equasser, to crush, that came from Latin, exquasare, to crush or shatter. So it wasn't echoic. But it's much older than the vegetable squash. And actually, the vegetable is a shortened form of an Algonquin word. Maybe, let me see if I can pronounce this. Exquoter squash. Exquoter squash.
Oh, interesting.
Algonquian, from Narragansett area. So, and literally, in the Indian language, it meant the green things that may be eaten raw.
Fascinating.
Exquoter squash.
All right, we're
so
going to take...
They're unrelated.
Right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a minute with our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor. Today we're talking about echoic words, words that sound like what they mean. This is Talk of Iowa.
Baby's got her own way of talking whenever she says something sweet. And she knows it's my world, she's a rockin', but my vocabulary's incomplete. And though it may sound confusing, sometimes I wish you'd give it to me straight. But I never feel like I'm losing when I take the time to translate.
Here's what I'm talking about.
Chicken bow wow.
That's what my baby says.
Mow, mow, mow.
And my heart starts pumping.
Chicka, chicka, chew up.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and my guest today is Patricia O'Connor, our English language expert. She blogs on the website grammarphobia.com. She's also the author of Woe Is I, as well as a number of other books on the English language. And today we're talking about echoic words, words that sound like what they mean. And you can join our conversation with some of your favorites or some questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Also, if you have a pet peeve you want to talk about with Pat, or if you have an English language question, let us know. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Dan sent us an email. He said, I was always taught that these words were onomatopoeia. Is there a difference, Pat?
Oh, no. In fact, some linguists use the term onomatopoeic to refer to these words. So whether we say echoic or imitative or onomatopoeic, it's the same idea.
Do you know where the word
represent.
Where did the word onomatopoeia come from?
Oh, gosh. You would ask. I think
that's my job, Pat.
Yeah. That's a big one. But by the way, I did leave out one interesting animal word that I didn't talk about.
Okay.
And I should mention this because I know a lot of people in your listening area are of Scandinavian ancestry.
Uh-huh.
And they might be interested in knowing that the word for a dog, cur, you know, where you can say it's a cur, C-U-R, that got its start in old Scandinavian languages, and it was echoic in those languages because of verbs that sounded something like kurra, K-U-R-R-A, kurra, meant to grumble or snarl. So that's how the word cur came about. But here we go, onomatopoeia. It's a coinage or formation of a word in imitation of a sound. Came along in the 1500s. And let me see, it's a borrowing of the Latin onomatopoeia, which means the coining of words, and it came earlier from Greek, onomatopoeia, making of a name or word. The parts of the Greek are onoma, which comes from word, and poiein, compose or make. And I apologize for my, I haven't had Greek. So at any rate, it comes from those two Greek stems for word and compose or make, ono and onomatos and poiein. So that's where it comes from.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. Judy also sent us an email with some of her favorite echoic words. Or, well, just one, kerfuffle, meaning a commotion or a fuss.
That's a good one. I can't vouch that it's echoic, but it sounds like it ought to be.
Absolutely. All right. Next up, we've got Tony on the line in Blairsburg. Hello, Tony.
Hi.
Hi.
I have the word tinkle. I don't know if
that's
tinkle. An iconic word, but when we were potty training our infants, we would have had to made it up make it up.
Tinkle is a very, that's a famous example of an echoic word. It sounds like what it means. The tinkling of a bell or of the tinkling of water landing in water. So, yeah, that's an echoic word.
All right, Tony, thank you so much for calling. And next up we'll go to Bob on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Bob.
Howdy.
Hi, what's your word?
Well, the word I was thinking of, you had a lot of ush sounds, but flush, which means so many different things, and I don't know where it started.
Oh, flush. That's a good one. It does have a lot of different meanings. You know, it can mean that you... that you're adequate, you have enough of something, you're flush. It can mean level with something. So it has a lot of different meanings. But let me see if I can check on the etymology of it here for you. I'm not sure if the flush that, you know, flushing your toilet is from the same. Now, here we go. There are different words flush. Four different unrelated words. One means to rush suddenly. Flush out or flow copiously. That's the sense of to splash water. That's from the 1600s. Let's see. I don't know what it says. Where does this come from? Doesn't seem to give an origin, but then there's flush meaning level or even. And that, yeah. First recorded in the 18th century. Then there's flush, which means to fly up suddenly, as in when you flush, you're hunting and you flush birds before shooting. Yeah, that's a different one. And it's related to flash, which is an echoic word. And then there's flush, which means a hand of cards all in one suit. That's borrowed from French, in which the old French flux or flowing meant a run of cards, and that was borrowed from the Latin fluxus. So some of these
what if I'm
come
feverish?
From that. Pardon me?
What if I'm feverish? Am I flush?
Oh, yeah, that's one they don't have in here, feverish. Yeah, that would be another. I would think that would be related to the rush of blood. You're flushed. Okay. You're red in the face. So I would think that would be all in the same family of, you know, flowing, which comes from the Latin fluxus.
Well, you've rekindled my interest in this. Many years ago, my father gave me a book written by Otto Whitaker called Such Language, and I'll have to get it back out and look up yours, too.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Grandma.
All right, thanks
a lot,
Bob.
If anyone out there is interested in having an affordable dictionary of etymology, you know, the OED is not affordable, but the Chambers Dictionary of Etymology is out there, and it's very reliable. There are etymology books out there that are a little bit fanciful. They take a bit too much for granted, and they do a lot of speculative work, but the Chambers is very good, and it's reliable. There's also an Oxford Dictionary of English Etymology, which is a smaller etymology. And if you like looking up words, those would be a lot of fun to have.
All right. Gary is on the line next from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
Hi, what's your story?
A good, great friend of mine who was my supervising teacher in Mason City at Mason City High School name of Dale Harmon, and he was great with words and also a good ping pong player. And he reversed the, the word ping pong to make it ganip ganop, which was more onomatopoetic.
You're right, because when you hit the ball, there's a small sound, and then it hits the table.
That's
ta-tump,
right.
Ta-tump, ta-tump, ta-tump. Yeah.
And so he started a ganip ganop club at Mason City High School.
That's
and
fun.
Made sure that everyone referred to the game by its proper term.
That's funny. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank
Good
you.
Memory.
Thank
yep,
you for your call, it. Gary. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Next up, Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Yeah, I like the onomatopoeia that we see in certain foreign words. They enter our lexicon quite easily because they sound so much like what it is that... the object, like a didgeridoo, for example, bongos.
What's didgeridoo?
I can just hear that. If a person was really, using a lot of tonality, you know, it would sound a lot like that instrument. So, I think those are interesting things that we quickly adopt because the onomatopoeia is so strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jim.
Also, words that are evocative of the sounds. I mean, the words whose sounds evoke the item are easy to remember for that reason. I mean, you're never going to forget what ping pong is. I mean, you'll never say to yourself, huh, what's that table tennis game they play with the little paddles? Of course you remember ping pong from the sounds that the ping pong ball makes. And you never forget the word meow that a cat makes, and say, "What's the word? What's the sound that a cat makes again?" I forget that. You know, you don't forget those things. So that's another reason that I think people are so fond of these words. They really are familiar,
and they're fun to say.
Yes.
That can't hurt.
Yes,
Jim. Thank you so much for calling. We've got a couple emails here. Jay says, I've been listening to and enjoying today's conversation, and I began wondering about the word goulash and whether or not it relates to sounds being made when stirring food or something of that nature.
Off the top of my head, I would say no. But I think it's a foreign word. It may, I don't know if it's Hungarian or not, but wait, let me see if I can find it here. Goulash. That was my grandfather's, pièce de résistance. He made incredibly good goulash. Let me see if I can find a goulash, a stew. It's borrowed from the Hungarian goulash. Goulash hush, herdsman's meat in Hungary. So there you go. A beef or lamb soup with onions and paprika, first apparently made by herdsmen while pasturing. So goulash.
Interesting.
Herdsman's meat.
I think it might have been echoic in the old Hungarian.
Well, it sure sounds like.
I think that's a wonderful
stirring.
Right. So David sent us an email from Grinnell, and he wants to take us back to the part where we talked about how you said that the SN in sneeze derived from an FN in Old Norse via an orthography confusion. He says, I am skeptical. How often do sound changes originate from orthography changes?
Well, in this case, it doesn't happen very often. But in this case, you've probably seen those old medieval S's. They're called long S's. And often, for instance, when they came at the front of a word, or when they were combined with certain consonants, or when they were doubled, they were written as an elongated thing that looked like an F. But the FN sound, FN, it just does not exist in English. It's common in some Scandinavian languages. When this word fnees came into English, it did exist for a while in early Old English as fnees, but it didn't last very long. By the time the Middle Ages came along and people were transcribing early manuscripts into Middle English, they started dropping that F and making it S. And there are two possible reasons. It may have been misread as an S when it was really an F, or it may have been the scribes making decisions on their own. This is not a normal sound. I'm going to make this S. And we know that scribes did that sometimes. For instance, when the English printer Caxton started his printing press in England, he imported a lot of Dutch printers because in Holland and Netherlands, they had more experience with setting type and doing printing. And some of these Dutch printers, on their own, inserted Dutch orthography into words like, say, ghost. They put the H in ghost. And there are other examples. Certain other printers who maybe had a little too much Latin put an S in the word island on the assumption that it was Latin, originated in Latin and came from Isola, which it didn't. It was Old English island, and it never had an S. So I know we're running out of time, but you can do the etymology on sneeze and find that in the OED.
All right. Ray is on the line in Iowa City. He wants to take us away from echoic words for just a moment. Hi, Ray.
Can you tell me anything about the phrase, get the show on the road? Is there anything like specific to circus?
I think it probably came either from the circus or from vaudeville.
Any time
traveling
frame,
theatrical,
ma'am?
Traveling theatrical kind of enterprise. I've been asked about that before, and it's not known for certain, but the speculation is that it probably came from the circus or from vaudeville or traveling theater.
Okay, Ray, thanks a lot for your call. And we've had a couple people call in to ask about this word, which is entirely new to me, borborygmus. I think I'm saying that right.
It.
Which apparently means stomach rumbling or gas passing through the intestines.
I wonder, is someone out there pulling our leg, Charity?
I don't know.
Our communal leg? I don't know. What's the word again?
Borborygmus.
I don't know. I have an American heritage.
Right, and our assistant producer here is saying no, it's real. She found it on WebMD. So,
okay, email me at grammarphobia. I have an email address. Ask me any question you want, including borborygmus or whatever it is.
All right, so that's a new one on you as well.
Yep, it is.
That sounds echoic to me.
You never know. Oh, wait a minute. Here it is, borborygmus, a rumbling noise produced by movement of gas through the intestines. It's from a Greek word, borborygmus, of imitative origin. So there you go. It is imitative. Those Greeks knew what they were doing.
So these do sound like words that we could make up, but you think that we've basically reached our ceiling on the number of echoic words that can be out there?
The number of new echoic words is going to be very, very small. It's pretty limited. It's pretty finite.
Even though I'm sure there are children working on it right now.
You know, I'll bet it's been done.
Well, Pat, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Charity.
Our English language expert, Patricia O'Connor, she blogs at grammarphobia.com. You can send her questions, which she'll answer on the website, grammarphobia.com. You can also find the answers to almost any question you can think of on that website as well. She's the author of Woe Is I, as well as a number of other books on language. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, 44 plays for 44 presidents, and we'll have a preview of the Landlocked Film Festival. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.